Welcome to the show. My name is Jake Gallen, and I will be your VIP host for the night. Let me see if your name is on the guest list. Ah, there it is. Before I let you in, I must let you know one thing. The people on this list are some of the very best eccentric entrepreneurs, creative visionaries, and ambitious leaders that Las Vegas has to offer. Whatever you see is for your eyes and ears only. Now, go on, get in there. The show is about to start. Good morning, Las Vegas. I don't know if you guys can tell with a little bit of the background noise, but I'm sitting here inside of Taverna Costera. We're here at Tech Tuesday, the third Tech Tuesday. It is hosted by the City of Las Vegas, also a partnership. I know with the UNLV's had some representatives. Tech in the Alley is a monthly meetup that features tech entrepreneurs and startups, and it's been growing and expanding. I'm actually sitting here with Daniel Corliss. He is a venture partner at Expert Dojo, which is a VC out in California. But as we were talking about before, his money has no borders. And so now he finds himself out here at Tech in the Alley in Las Vegas, networking and connecting. So Daniel, thank you for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks, Jake. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you are first up to bat in this test experiment out here. Do you come out to Vegas often, or are you out here specifically for this event?
So I actually moved here back in February. I kind of got away from the environment and disruption that was happening in California. And I was coming to Las Vegas a lot just to kind of get away from all that. And I just kind of finally said, why don't I just move out here? I mean, I'm coming here to get away from it all the time and staying in these lovely, resorts and, getting away from it all for 4 or 5 days. Finally, I just said, I'm making the move. So happy to be here.
So funny that you say that. Once you hit the 2-year mark of being acclimated to Vegas, you'll never leave. It happens to everybody.
I already love it. I'll tell you what, I'm never stuck in traffic. The roads and the sidewalks and the parks are super clean. Obviously, there's a lot of tax incentives and reasons to want to come here and build a business as well. And I get to play golf every week. I mean, there's just tons of outdoor recreation aside from golf, but I absolutely love it. Best move I ever made.
Yeah, you'll learn that Vegas is very diverse, politically, entertainment, economically is beginning to, and that's why we are sitting here today, because there is a tech industry that's kind of had a few different starts in Vegas, but has failed to reach some sort of pivotal point of reaching network effect and kind of gravitating onwards. But now with the COVID pandemic, it's kind of accelerated us into this digital based economy. And so I think that's why you're seeing yourself out here and Tech in the Alley beginning to grow more and more, because there's so much opportunity out here to either invest or start a tech firm out here, because there isn't that many. Do you see something of similar nature?
Oh, it's crazy. I'm definitely not the only one that came here. So the amount of talent that's coming here from not only places like California, but Seattle, Portland, it's incredible. I mean, there's even just right here, right across the sidewalk here, there are people sitting in that other room that have had IPOs, huge successful exits, just giants in their space and industry and in tech and in other realms as well. They're all coming to Vegas because of what's here. And that talent pool is really starting to build. The opportunities here are starting to build, and it's not a bubble. I think we're really on the precipice of something that's just gonna set this place on fire in a good way.
As a born and raised Las Vegas native, one of the rare unicorns that you'll probably meet out here, I'm so bullish on the city. Recently, I left a nightclub job. I was working on the strip for 10 years, and I've been dabbling in crypto. That's kind of what helped me get out of that industry. And I've been kind of pioneering my own blockchain movement over at the Harry Reid Research and Technology Park. And it seems weird when you're on the ground floor of building something different in a city that is based off of sexuality and gambling and kind of just losing it, the international playground.
Yeah, getting blackout drunk and just, bachelor parties. And yeah, you realize pretty quickly when you live here and you're not just visiting for, that bachelor party, that wedding or whatever it is, it's so much more than that. And actually, since I've lived here, I only go to the strip when there's like friends in town and I'm meeting people for dinner. it's not, I mean, that's not Vegas, and that's not what's happening here. If you look outside of the strip and you look at companies like Boxable that came here, you know, like Elon Musk just announced in a tweet that he's living in a Boxable home, you know, on the SpaceX property in Texas. But that company just moved here less than a year ago and is based right here in North Las Vegas. You know, they make those tiny homes. And that's just one example of thousands. And it's incredible. It's Vegas is not the strip. It's not gambling. It's not sex. It's not being drunk. There's awesome, responsible, you know, economic things happening here in a really positive way.
Yeah, the utility and accessibility of Vegas being next to an international airport, the tax neutral benefits, the opportunities are really endless. But tell me a little bit about Expert Dojo.
Yeah, so Expert Dojo is a venture capital fund, but we're not just venture capital. The way that we use that money and the way that we help our investments is through our accelerator program for the most part. So we invest in those companies and then we help them accelerate to rapid growth, sustainable growth. And, you know, we want to get them to a wildly successful exit somewhere down the road. And that's how we work. So we have a team of experts in their field. I mean, we have SMEs, which is subject matter experts, people that have had successful exits and IPOs. They're all on our team. So when we have a company come to us and say, hey, will you invest with us, you know, invest in us and help us grow? Absolutely. We're not just going to give you money, though. We're going to deploy our team, give you that expertise, give you business connections so that you're just hitting the ground running super fast. So
it seems like startup incubators are really the hot trend. Obviously, Y Combinator is kind of like the big behemoth. I had a gentleman on my show that went through the Y Combinator program, and he told me it wasn't even so much about the capital that they're going to receive, but it's the network that they're kind of locked into, as you just mentioned, because as society progresses, and in a digital economy, you have to collab with people. It's not this type of hyper-competitivism that worked in the brick and mortar business where you're fighting for those kind of resources. Now you have to also fight for attention, and collabing is the one of the most beneficial ways to get there.
Absolutely. So that's exactly why if you're looking for money, you should be looking for the right money. You should be looking for the team that's behind that money and how they can use that money with you. So it's much more than what we thought of as traditional financing or traditional capital, 10 plus years ago. It's so much more than that. So if you're looking for that money, very important to look for the right VC fund for you. So you want people that know your industry. You want competent money. Otherwise, they might try to get you to do things that don't make sense for your industry and don't make sense for your growth. So very important stuff. Absolutely. We also invest. I just wanted to make note of this, that we're highly cognizant and aware of like ESG and social equity. So we invest heavily into Africa and South America, third world countries, and other areas of the world that not only need capital and growth, but that equity investment isn't just for the money, it's social equity. So we think that the future is female, we think the future is colorful, and we think the future has no boundaries as far as who gets that money. So very important.
It's so important to notice the value of social equity. I actually talk about this exact point a handful of times on this show. Even a simple process like this conversation, this podcast, I'm investing social capital into you, you're investing social capital into me, and then at some point down the road, the social equity is redeemed, and it's not always some sort of financial compensation. It could be a network connect to somebody in a different business. It can be a redeemable referral of some sort, you know, or maybe down the road, that person that's sitting across from you on a podcast opens up a business and goes public and you get in on the private sale beforehand. So this social equity goes much, much farther than just like the one road dynamic of receiving financial compensation.
Right, right. Absolutely.
It's important. And as society progresses, it seems like there's larger social impacts and social causes to all these businesses, especially with the PC movement and more females and you know, a colorful world. We have to be inclusive of everyone, but everyone wants to have that cause. Like Tom's Shoes kind of pioneered that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they were one of the first. And I think it's so important. I mean, the female founders that exist today that are, you know, going to IPO, for example, that isn't just because females are just now becoming leaders and smart and, you know, just extremely good at running business. They always have been. We just haven't really been giving them a chance and providing that social equity. You know, same with people of different color and different race, different ethnic heritage. So important to start recognizing that, hey, if we're all sitting on at a table and we're all white and male, there's a problem with that. And we really need to be doing better at recognizing, you know, who we're sitting across from, who we're helping support and getting to those positions. I think that's super important.
Female, and Vegas is a very great city for female entrepreneurs. I think that female entrepreneurship is extremely undervalued, and that's why I try to bring on female entrepreneurs onto the show, because they provide a different insight. And in a city like Las Vegas, women actually have a lot more power here than they do in any other city. Working on the Strip for 10 years, the women are the ones that are making all the tips. They're dividing it to their busser, which was me. So you're a little bit at the mercy of whatever that they describe. And a great analogy I like to use, or metaphor, is that if you're walking around on the Strip and all of the men disappeared, it would probably operate just fine. But if all the women disappeared, nobody would go. And exactly. That shows you the power of women in Las Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about the investment thesis of Expert Dojo. Do you guys go tech heavy? Is there a growing market that you guys have been looking into?
So we have different accelerator cohorts, and we all invest and have diligent teams that focus on investments of certain industries. So I'm on the healthcare team. So we invest in all types of healthcare, even sort of fringe healthcare stuff. But it's all very tech heavy now. I mean, AI and quantum computing is coming into healthcare like just like a tidal wave. It's every system, every SaaS platform, everything that's trying to drive healthcare and make, you know, smart decisions or improve outcomes of health services are using AI to power physicians' determinations and care path for their patients. So it's all very tech heavy right now. You know, biotech, microbiology, every realm. So yeah, that's absolutely where it's headed. Really exciting stuff. Las Vegas, sadly, doesn't have enough healthcare innovation happening here yet. There are some things going on. UNLV is doing some really interesting, exciting stuff as far as healthcare goes. But aside from that, we need more of it. Absolutely.
You know, we need to attract these different businesses. And it's simple conversations like this that make it much more attractive when you know that there's actual capital in here. Because in Vegas, I've had on a few different startup companies. I had Jeff Saling, who has Startup NV. Mm-hmm. And I work with Jamie over at the Harriet Research and Technology Park. It's a big 144-acre property, and they're attempting to build out a startup incubator as well. But there just hasn't been that much attractive features. Tony Hsieh tried to start that a decade ago and seemed to hit a lot of walls. But now seeing Expert Dojo come out from California and see that this is an attractive place, it's only going to encourage those entrepreneurs to build something out without being fearful of losing everything.
Absolutely. We want to raise the tide to lift all boats. And I've been talking with Jeff Saling and his team at Startup NV. You know, they are really the local fund that knows the landscape here. They know the local entrepreneur scene and the tech scene. So we've sort of partnered with them a little bit on looking at some of these deals coming through their pipeline. And, you know, I've told them, hey, we're open to co-invest and follow on, or, you know, however you want us to help, we're here to help. So I just love that the VC and angel scene here isn't competitive. We're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to, you know, notch wins here for Las Vegas. The world commerce scene as a whole. I mean, we're trying to lift it all up. So
exactly.
It's great.
Tell me a little bit. Tell me about the myths of VCs. Sometimes VCs receive a negative stigma, I think, especially out in Silicon Valley, about taking, just investing in 100 companies, knowing that maybe one or two are going to hit. Maybe that's the old school approach to it. What have you learned as being in the VC world that maybe is misconstrued from the general public?
So you're absolutely right. That is not part of our thesis at Expert Dojo. And you're going to say, of course you would say that, but it's really not. We're super selective. We have a 300% capital success rate. So basically our internal rate of return is 300%. That is wildly more successful than just about any other VC fund that I know of. And the reason why is because we have a super smart diligence bench. The companies that we're looking at, we don't miss much. Like, we know if something isn't right, or the IP is off, or like that patent isn't really solid, or you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we sniff that out really well because we have a smart team. Now, we think it's important, again, this goes back to like competent money. And there's a lot of people that are just throwing money, especially right now. There's a huge bubble in venture capital. It's all over the news. Everyone in venture capital is knowing about it and hearing about it. There is a bubble. There's probably going to be some bursting. But if you have great deals in your portfolio, obviously you're going to be somewhat immune to that. So again, be smart where you're getting your money. Just because you want money or need money doesn't mean you should just receive it from anybody. Make sure that person is vested in your success and in your health and in the growth of your company. With that being said, there's a lot of opportunities out there right now, especially. It's we're everywhere.
It's there's definitely some growing marketing surrounding VC. My first previous business adventure, I was trying to get into the tech world, and I was very hesitant to sign on to a VC because I know they could come in and take, you know, 40 or 50% of your equity, and then they basically take control of the company and pivot your way. And you see all these crazy one-off stories of the founders losing control of their own business. So it's glad to see that there's different ways to approach it, especially out here in Vegas, where you might have to do a little bit more digging to find these companies. Do you have any specific metrics or approaches to finding these entrepreneurs, or do they mostly come to you, approach you guys?
I've tried to build my pipeline up in a way to where people know that my door is open to look at good deals. And so I have a lot of things, you know, come to me and fall in my lap, which is great. It's hard to get a good pipeline set up, you know, if you're a VC, especially if you're new like me. I haven't been in the VC world very long, so it's good to have those relationships. I will say, going back to your previous comment, that there is this attitude that VCs have that, you know, we kind of, there's a lot of VCs that point their nose up, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of the humanistic, you know, relationship that has gone from some of those conversations. And there's a lot of VCs that just talk down to people. They're rude, they're short and terse. I think that I like to have a humanistic approach. You know, I'm nice to everybody. I'm open to listen to everyone's ideas and, you know, listen to them talk about their, mm-hmm. their startup and hear their pitch. I think we need more of that in venture capital because, you know, we're just going to continue to get a bad name of just being these robots with money that treat people badly. So again, that's not part of our thesis. We're trying to do things different. We're trying to be people helping people, you know, not just a VC bank that's slamming doors and, yeah, you know, kind of being rude. So there's a lot of that.
And it's terrifying being an entrepreneur, starting up your first business and going out and approaching these VCs that are going to take part in your equity. Are they the right fit? It's like a relationship, right? It's like your girlfriend or boyfriend. You're going to be stuck with these people for at least a long time until there's either an IPO or they sell their private equity to somebody else.
Yeah. And unfortunately in the VC world, like you're often getting married before the wedding. You're receiving capital from people that you don't really know yet. Maybe you've been talking with them about, you know, raising for the last month or two, but you don't really know them. And then once you get into that accelerator or, you know, you're taken off, that isn't someone you want to work with. You know, that relationship ends up going sour and south really quick. So again, very important. Yeah. Like, make sure that that's someone you want to work with and someone you're going to have fun with. That's also very important. Like, if you're not having fun building your business, building your company, you don't have that passion in it, and you can't stand next to somebody who's sharing that passion and having fun with you, even through the hard times, go find someone else. You know, just wait till you have that right feeling about that money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about the journey, as they say. If you live too far in the future, then you won't be able to embrace the moment, and that when you finally get to that end point, you won't feel anything. What is the average investment into a startup over at Expert Dojo, or at least the range from the smallest to the highest?
Yeah, so our standard accelerator investment is $100,000 at 7% equity. And then, you know, there are various terms we can sort of, you know, have in that contract, that deal. But we're anywhere between $50,000 and $250,000 typically. So we're usually early stage, seed, pre-seed. But you know, we're trying to get those companies to that A round, right? We're trying to accelerate to, you know, we want them to have a half a billion dollar exit in 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, that's where we're trying to go. We're not trying to make a 200% return. You know, we're trying to make 1,000% return.
Yep. That's the power of having a long-term mindset in this world where the attention span seems to be decreasing every day, whether it's through social media or even in the financial markets. There's so many day traders now. Before, there used to be a lot of swing traders. No one wants to hold on to that equity or to that value. They just want to flip everything.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's something called, power cost return. And you know, many VCs know what that term means, but basically, if you don't know it, Google it. But basically it means, like, as you said earlier, you're going to have deals that don't work out, and maybe you get a slight return, maybe you get no return, but there's always that curve line. And so even if you're a VC that has one company with a huge exit, or you get them to a great, you know, equity financing round, and let's say it's just hundreds of millions of dollars, that one deal might make your fund break even. So just keep that in mind. I mean, that's why we're so hyper focused on being very picky and very selective, very just laser focused on our, you know, our investments, on our people. So
laser eyes, man, laser eyes. This is incredible. Before we get out of here, there's one question that I ask every single person on this podcast. And now that you've lived out here for a little bit, you actually can have some attachment to this question. But what does Las Vegas mean to you?
Las Vegas means a new utopia. I mean, I see it. The things that are happening here, it's just like the ground is starting to shake a little bit, and I can feel it. And it's like some magical things are about to happen here. I can't even tell you. Land here is cheap. There's plenty of water. The tax incentives are here. The talent is here. People want to see success here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wake up every day excited. I mean, that's how much I like it here.
I have heard the term thrown around as Vegas becoming Silicon Central instead of Silicon Valley. The neon desert can become this.
It's happening. It really is.
I'm so excited. Daniel, where do I send all the listeners and viewers to follow you and get more involved or reach out with Expert Dojo?
Yeah, so Expert Dojo, really simple, expertdojo.com. They can find me. So I have my own agency. I do angel investments, trading, also work in healthcare. So dcadvisoryllc.com. You can email me at Daniel at dcadvisoryllc.com. Find me on LinkedIn.
Boom. That's the easiest way. It's so funny. Yeah. I think that's where we connected, was actually on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Daniel, thank you for coming on, sharing some knowledge with us in the VC world. And it's incredibly enlightening to know that there is a lot of interest in the city and that you want to focus on the entrepreneurs, especially. That's why I focus on the show. So thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, guys. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Summer is upon us, ladies and gentlemen. The Olympics, baseball, major championships, and all concerts are about to pop off. You know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. Tame your pubes with help from our friends over at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation performance package includes the brand-new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going over to manscaped.com and using the code THEGUESTLIST. I don't know about you guys, but I am fully excited and ready to go out for this post-quarantine. I recently just went to a huge concert at the new Allegiant Stadium. We went over to Resorts World Casino opening, and Vegas is just getting started. Don't go outside without having your confidence at an all-time high. Make sure that you and the world is starting to open up to the Performance Package 4.0. It is here, and it is here to stay. Inside, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver, ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, plus two free gifts. The Performance Boxer Briefs, which is something I use on the regular, and the Shed Travel Bag. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on and off switch that can engage with the travel lock, and a 4,000 LED spotlight for when you need a more precise shave. The package also comes with the weed whacker to chop your worst weeds up into both your nose and ear. This tool is a lock to take home the gold in the biathlon. After trimming your pubes, show some sportsmanship with Manscaped's liquid formulations. The ball preserver, ball deodorant, and crop reviver ball toner are the key to feeling victorious this year. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEGUESTLIST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off, guys, and free shipping with the code THEGUESTLIST at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped. Now let's get back to the show. What's up, Vegas? We are back with the second interview, and I'm actually here with somebody that I've been waiting to have this conversation with for a few months now that we have become a little familiar with each other. I'm here with Josh Levitt. He is one of the organizers over here at Tech in the Alley, and he's a founder of Built in Vegas and Ionovate. Yes. We're going to learn a little bit about it and a little bit about Josh. So thank you for sitting down with me and spending some time.
Now, Jake, I'm glad you're here, man. You know, I'm a big fan. You're doing amazing work here in the community, and thank you for letting me be on the show.
No, thank you. Tell me and tell us a little bit about Built in Vegas, Ionovate, and what the differences are.
Yeah, so I'll go right to Built in Vegas, right? Well, you know, me and you both grew up in Vegas, right?
Yeah, right. We're the rare Vegas natives. This is a unicorn conversation within itself.
That's right, right? And me and you, I think we've even talked about it, that, you know, growing up here, we really only knew the hospitality scene. And it's funny that I'm wearing this shirt today, because I always tell people, growing up, I wanted to be a valet parker, right? Because that was a job. It was a 5-year wait list. You're going to make a ton of money, drive some cool cars. I don't know if you said the same thing, but I talked to other people that grew up here, and they say they had that same sort of idea, mm-hmm. because that's all we knew, right?
And now they charge for valet. It's ruined.
I know. There goes a tipping, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I eventually got into the technology field by chance, right? And did fairly well on it, and became a CIO of a company, and started finding myself in a big struggle to find talent. Especially when Nevada started doing its new, you know, diversify its economy push, that I think they called it New Nevada.
Was that around the same time as Tony Hsieh coming in and building out his incubator?
It was, I think it was before, before then. I don't know. It was Sandoval that did it. You know, Governor mm-hmm. Sandoval was really doing that push. So it had to have been like 2011, okay. 2012. And, you know, they're talking about, hey, we're going to bring in the Tesla and, you know, this other car company and all these other cool things. And I got to thinking, if I'm having a hard time finding talent now, forget about it when, you know, all these big companies are just pulling this talent. One, I wouldn't be able to afford any of it. And number two, even if it's available, you know, how am I going to find it? How am I going to, as a company, grow? Because I always thought technology as an accelerator to business, right? So how am I going to accelerate the business I was in? So I got very hyper engaged in workforce development. Started visiting a lot of high schools, right? And I'd go and I'd say, hey, raise your hand if you have a family member that's in technology. And I would be surprised if two people raise their hand. Most of the time, people just look at you silly, right? And so I said, all right, well, this is a problem. If people were like me growing up, they just don't know what technology is because there's no exposure to it within their household. It's not their problem. It's not their fault. It's not their parents' fault or the community's fault. It's just we are what we're accustomed to, right? So I got really into mentorship and promoting technology careers. Eventually left my job as a CIO and started working for a nonprofit that focused on building pathways for youth in technology, right? So we would train for free. The company was called Tech Impact. And we trained students for free, and then we would help them find jobs in the tech field. And then I helped start PunchCode, which at the time was the only post-secondary licensed private coding schools in Nevada. And the reason why is because we wanted to have a pipeline for developers. That's what they're saying. We don't have any developers. So the focus on that was just to demonstrate, again, that there's a pipeline, hoping that other companies will come in and say, all right, this market is valuable, and we can start pushing out a tremendous amount of developers. You know, I say that because Built in Vegas, Ionovate, and even Tech Alley were all based off of that realization that we don't have a tech community or a way for people to engage or do anything outside of the hospitality, which everybody knows. So Built in Vegas, the reason I created it is because I wanted there to be some sort of content if someone Googled Las Vegas tech or Las Vegas startup. I said, all right, let's just create it, right? You're an entrepreneur. I love entrepreneurs. And actually, that's what I learned by hanging out with a lot of entrepreneurs is they just do it. I got an idea. There's a problem. Let's just solve it, right? They don't wait around for others to do it. So that's what I did. Bought builtin.vegas, titled it, you know, the tech and startup scene, and started writing just stories about technology, about startups. Started a podcast, you know. Yeah.
You got like, what, 40 episodes on there almost?
If that many. You know, it's, you know, we were doing it pretty consistently for a while. But anyway, you know, that again, now there is some sort of entry point, right? And then, so that's been working really well. And then, you know, it inspired me to do other things. So I built my own company, Ionovate. And again, what Ionovate does is it's actually based off something I learned at the developer school, was that I had to find a way to mitigate the risk for people to hire junior developers. And so what I do is I hire junior developers, put a senior developer as an intermediary between them, and then we work for clients and work as a launching pad with the opposite of a non-solicit. So I actually encourage my clients to hire the people that...
So it's like a mentoring program of sorts.
It's a work and learn, right? And so they're getting paid while they're working, while they're being mentored, and they're working on you know, for clients. The clients love it, right? Because there's a 30,000 to 60,000 cost when it comes to allocating like senior developer talent to upskill a junior developer, and you're taking time away from a project you're trying to deliver yesterday, right? So for the client, if you're looking at risk, it's much less riskier to go to India and get some teams, right? Than it is to say, all right, well, I'll take a junior developer. So we mitigate that risk by providing that senior talent and that junior talent, scaling that senior developer's time across multiple projects. The junior developers do the majority of the work. The client isn't doing any of that mentorship, so they can concentrate on delivering their product. And at the end of the day, they got to know these junior developers, and if they want to hire them, go for it. Can't hire the senior developers. Those are really hard to find. But we got plenty of junior developers here in Vegas. We just had to figure out a way to de-risk that relationship. And it's doing quite well. For me, I just concentrate on developing that pipeline, because I got talent liquidity, right? It's the business model, and business development. Thankfully, I partnered with a group called Concierge Software Development. They provide the senior team, which gives me a bigger tech stack, and we can help a lot more clients. So it's taken off, and I'm you know, real excited about that. And then you talked about, well, what's going on with Tech Alley? Well, again, Tech Alley was saying, well, how do we have a place if someone wants to engage a tech scene that they can actually go to? And this is the result of it. So Tech Alley is basically an idea that says, let's bring together all of these meetups into a conference-style space, and people can follow tracks throughout the day if they're interested in it. Application development, software development, you know, IT, if we can do it, who cares, right? But we're going to create, again, it solves a problem, where do you connect to the community? Well, now we have it. Organizers of these meetups, you know, no more of these just before the meetup happens that you're throwing everything together and trying to get the stuff. We'll help, you know, with the venues. We'll help with the marketing. We'll help get people here. And the sponsorship, you just show up, man.
Exactly. And it's been so much fun to see this grow over the last 3 months. What do you think the issue was to the prior tech movements out in the city where they didn't have enough momentum or steam to receive as much of attention as Tech in the Alley is now?
It's a Tech Alley? Well, here's what it is. I have a saying, and it's that it's easier to critique than it is to create. So the person that just gets something on paper or does some sort of thing, people will, all right, hey, I got an idea, we can make it better, right? But it takes that person just to make that first move. And I think that's what originally occurred in downtown with Tony Shea and the other folks that did it. And, you know, I was talking to somebody, and I said, look at Tech Alley. Tech Alley, in some way, maybe even directly, is a consequence of that event, because they were telling me there was a bunch of tech folks used to get together. And I forget what it's called, like the Raven or something. I don't know, but it was over by the Commonwealth down there. Mm-hmm. And they were just getting together just to network and chat. And from that came the idea of, hey, let's start creating our own meetups. And throughout the years, you know, all these meetups started coming. You know, the UXUI, you have the Python group, you know, JavaScript, and all these people that just had an interest that wanted to share that knowledge, just said, all right, we're going to create these meetups. And now Tech Alley comes around after all this time and says, well, now let's gather together and rebuild that momentum, and let's see what sort of branches comes from this excitement of getting everybody back together again. You get a lot of people here sharing ideas. It's going to be interesting to see what they come up with. But I don't blame, you know, that effort. I'm glad that somebody said, let's give this a shot. Let's see what happens. And then... And then see what the result, even if it's, you know, 10, 20 years later.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a huge combination of different people at this Tech in the Alley. I just spoke with Daniel, who's part of the VC firm. You're the organizer. There's a current UX, UI workshop that's happening, and there's like 4 different workshops. And I think that's what the difference is with Tech Alley versus some of these predated movements, is that they didn't offer enough utility where... We do get in this like information or analysis paralysis, right? Where you meet up with like-minded entrepreneurs and you sit and have a conversation, everyone's motivated, and then nothing really happens after that. But now there's actually action happening. We're literally sitting here having a podcast, recording it so other people could listen. Different UX or designers are receiving information and all of these other meetups. So there's more information and actual networking happening. And what I've heard from is that there's different startups actually coming down here specifically for this event, which didn't seem like had existed prior.
Yeah, and that's it, right? We just sort of said it. We needed a place to have a tech scene so that people knew about it. No one, you know, these people that are coming in now probably Googled it, got lost, and said, all right, well, they must not have anything. But now we do, and it's, and the word's getting down. So I was excited to hear when, you know, people from San Francisco and I think Utah, a gentleman from Colorado was talking about, you know, coming down here and, you know, hopefully, you know, starting a business here or finding some talent here as well. I do want to go back to one other thing, a big principle of Tech Alley, right? You look at Tony Shea and, you know, what he did in the downtown area, and which was remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And the only thing that I see as an issue is that his vision relied on his shoulders, right? That whole effort was on the shoulders of one hero. And I challenge us here at Tech Alley and the community to say, can we create an event, a movement, a community that's on the shoulders of the community and not just one person, right? You know, entrepreneurs, we come up with ideas all the time, and who knows what's going to be shiny in 6 months that was going to grab our attention. So let's not put it on my shoulders. Let's put it on a community that can really come up with neat ideas. It can be revolving, right? It can be long lasting, and you know, continue this momentum. I think that's what makes a good effort, is that if it's just part of the scene, right? It's part of the culture that's in Vegas. I am inspired by like First Friday that's held here in the Arts District, right? It's just, you know, it's every First Friday. I don't know who runs it, right?
It's the longest standing event in the city too.
Yeah, you know, does somebody run it, or are we just kind of in the habit of showing up every First Friday? You know,
I think it originally was founded by one or two individuals, but now there's a collective community that governs it, and I'm assuming that's something that will probably happen in Tech Alley's future as well. right now it's operated by you, the city of Las Vegas, Elizabeth, and a few other entities to get it started. Yeah. But eventually people are going to want to take leaderships to kind of roll and roll out their thought strategies or whatever it is.
That's exactly it. There's a council actually that runs it too. So I formed a council, I got people that were interested. We shared ideas. It was a horizontal relationship. You know, I just put the guy in charge of the Zoom link, right? I wasn't the one, you know, telling them what we have to do. Just sort of said, hey, I think this would be a cool idea. What's some thoughts behind it? And we just sort of made it run.
As someone who's now been doing this this is the third event, are there any sectors of the tech industry that you're seeing maybe are blossoming or blooming out here in Las Vegas that's receiving a little bit more attention?
I you know what? I would say, who's been receiving a lot of attention is application developers, right? Because we were saying we need more developers. But I'm excited about the entrepreneur growth here and the attention that entrepreneurs and startups are starting to get, particularly with ideas around, how can we connect to industry? How can we de-risk that relationship so that the casinos and our big industries here in Southern Nevada will start taking advantage of this talent and mindset of the entrepreneurs locally, right? I think me and you have been part of conversations, and I think we've asked that. Why isn't Nevada or Las Vegas disruptors of our own industry, and we're letting other places come in here with new ideas like DraftKings that just changes everything? Well, why did we miss that ball on that one, right? So can we, get these big industries that we have, having these relationships with entrepreneurs, startups, so that, they can start leading again in a very competitive market, right? I think it's good for Vegas because, again, it's a very competitive market. Everybody's opening up casinos. And I think it's good for entrepreneurs because, you know what, if you can make it work here in that industry, it's now scalable globally, right? Because hospitality is everywhere.
Vegas has such superior infrastructure for the tech scene. It's there. Vegas has operated in this 3D model for such a long time. It's done such a bad job recently as integrating a tech overlay. I call it like the fourth layer or the fourth dimension. But having events like this showcases the different entrepreneurs out here and shows that you don't have to work on the strip to succeed. There's a blooming network of maybe 5,000 or 10,000 entrepreneurs in the city. And once you do tap into this network, you realize how connected everybody really is. And that's the benefit, is that if you do something magnificent out here, you can have a huge and drastic impact on the city, rather than if you're building something out in Silicon Valley where you're kind of just blending in with all the other billion-dollar unicorns.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of gaps to fill here, and all it needs is a leader to kick it off. You know, I tell a story, and I don't know how much time I have, but I love the story, right?
We got 5-10 minutes.
I might be able to fit this here. But growing up here, you remember some of the people, the big players, and they had big, Binion, was one. Stu Pack was a personality here. Jan Jones. Was it Black Hurts?
She
was,
yes.
Jan Lavery Jones. When I knew her, all these folks that made a name for themselves, and you see pictures of them, and you go to the Facebook for old school Vegas, and everybody says, hey, do you remember this person or this? I thought that was so cool. But I remember because I was in the aviation business as a CIO. There was like a picture of. I think they have the plane is it the Hacienda coming to the airport where it did this record breaking sort of flight and went across the salts. And there's a picture of, I don't know who was in it, man. It could have been Vinny. I think it was some of the casino execs, but they're reaching down, grabbing some supplies from a car that's behind them, and they're picking it up. And I thought, that's what I want. I want to be remembered and put a picture of me on a wall, and they go, hey, that's Josh. Yeah, he was a good guy. That's funny that Eric, cool that he did something like that. Just to be remembered, right? And I think there's a lot of opportunities, again, for that now, because so much attention has been on hospitality. And, can there be disruptors? Can there be somebody that brings together a community? It's changing, right? We've been talking about automation. We've been talking about the need for new technology talent. I think the casinos are starting to see, or the hospitality is seeing the importance of becoming more innovative. I mean, just look at it now, from pre-COVID to now COVID. We've gone down the strip. I don't even recognize it. Some LCD TV salesman went through there and sold his whole stock to every casino. He retired. Let's change it. And it's make, Vegas just an experience for our guests. I'm all for automation. I'm all for customizing the experience. Why not? That's some cool stuff. But let's make sure that we have the talent here locally that can help them produce it, but more importantly, create some sort of culture that if kids see this now, they're not going, I want to be a Valley Parker. They're understanding, okay, I have an idea. Now I know how to incorporate it. Now I can implement a solution. That's an innovation, right? Innovation is more than just an idea. Innovation is bringing that damn thing to market, right? But now they understand how they can do it, because everybody has ideas, but execution is the hard part, right?
That is the hardest part. There's not many original ideas that happen in reality anymore, but it does come down to execution, right? I was having this conversation with one of my business partners about the finance industry and how we've dove into the crypto world, where you feel like so many people are going to do this idea, but then nobody actually does. But then in the finance world, you see a company like Cash App and Square come in and revolutionize the banking sector that had been existing for 200 years. So it all comes down to the execution and the movement that you can have. But now in this new society that COVID's kind of accelerated us towards, entrepreneurs and content creators have like a massive crossroad and intersection where you see somebody like me is sitting out here and recording and also building products. But you have to be able to market yourself. Entrepreneurs can't hide behind their business anymore. They have to be out there in the front for their communities to connect with it, because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of good personalities out here that I'm finding, right? Mm-hmm. Now that we're bringing this entrepreneur, groups together, with an ecosystem that's led by entrepreneurs, which follows, you know, Brad Feld's book, Startup Communities. Edon up north is using it. I'm glad we're starting to incorporate it down in Southern Nevada. These people are now making a presence, now have some sort of opportunity to, share their ideas. There's no more patriarch, and there was once. I mean, if Tony Shady meant it or not, but there was a patriarch that you had to go to when it comes to entrepreneurs. There is no more, right? It's an opportunity, a nice horizontal opportunity for everybody to get engaged and work together and make something that has a Vegas flavor. Whenever I talk to entrepreneurs, I say, forget Silicon Valley. What's our flavor? What's Vegas? I don't want to be called Vegas, Silicon Vegas, or...
Yeah, it was the Silicon Central or Silicon Desert or something like that is what I've been hearing derivatives of.
Yeah, I once had that. I said, I think Silicon Central was something I used to promote a long time ago, but screw that anymore, man. What's our... Forget Silicon, right? It's the wrong kind of Silicon. Let's talk about the good, what Vegas has to offer here.
It's the entertainment capital of the world, but it's becoming the experience capital of the world. Yeah. And that's what's going to lift it up and make it one of the most iconic cities in the entire world, if it isn't already. Before we get out of here, I ask one question to everybody. Same question. What does Las Vegas mean to you?
Las Vegas is, Las Vegas is home. Right. That's it. I love this place. I can't think of anywhere else. It's home. It's the best thing I can say, man. Right.
It's the best way. Well put. Where do I send all the listeners and viewers to follow you on social media, learn more about Ionovate and Built in Vegas?
So I'm glad you asked that.
And Tech Alley as well.
Yeah. So, get a little late to the game, right? We really threw together Tech Alley as soon as some of the restrictions gone. So again, this is the third event. A lot of it was catching up with sponsorships, getting venues, and really getting to the point where we could start concentrating on things like social media. But we did create a social media presence now. So we're going to use this event to start putting content on it. But you can follow us on Tech Alley Events. And we named that because, like Reno was talking about bringing Tech Alley up there. So this model is scalable, and I want to see us be able to create community. So, it has a bland name, right? So Tech Alley Events, and that's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Me personally, I'm on LinkedIn. I think I'm like the Joshua Levitt or the Josh Levitt or something like that.
The LinkedIn God sitting across from me.
I don't think so. There's a lot more people doing some things on that. But that's the best way. Of course, Built in Vegas is builtin.vegas. You can go there and read some articles. If you want to contribute to the content, reach out to me. Let me know, because I need to hear stories and share stories about what people are doing here in Las Vegas. And then Ionovate is, which is an interesting name. Ionovate, and think about the business model I talked about. An ion, loses an electron and it's a positive ion. It's getting nerdy. But that's the whole idea. You're supposed to be losing, and it's going to go attached to another, atom, right? Mm-hmm. So it's ION and then NOAVTE.com.
I'll make sure it's all tagged.
But it's Ion and Innovate. Is the
perfect. Well, Josh, thank you for coming on, and thank you for organizing these events. This is 3 out of 3 for me. I enjoy it, and they're only growing larger every event. And you're adding new facets. This time we have a VC component to it, which didn't exist in the previous one. So I'm excited to see what happens next month and therefore after.
I am excited too. And again, there's people coming to me and saying, I got ideas that could really branch off of that. I'm saying go for it, right? There's no competition here. Let's just keep building this thing.
A city collaboration. Yeah, thank you for allowing me to set up and do this. I'm sure there'll be more of this in the future. And thank all of you guys for listening. Thank you, Josh, for organizing this. We'll catch you on the next interview.
Thank you.
And we're back. We're here with our third interview of the day. I'm sitting here with David Thompson. He is the founder of Changing Vegas, and he has a game established under Changing Vegas called Asteroid Arena, which we will hear a little bit about. He was also one of the attendees at my blockchain meetup last month on the last Tuesday, where we had a lot of fun. I know he's been very interested in NFTs and gaming and all of this and innovation. So this is why we are here at Tech in the Alley to talk with different entrepreneurs and see all their glorious minds at work. So David, thank you for sitting here with me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jake.
Scoot Appreciate up just a little bit closer to the mic, just a little bit closer.
Like that?
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. tell me a little bit about Changing Vegas and what is the goal of Changing Vegas, and then how did Asteroid Arena become a thing?
Sure. So Changing Vegas is a game development company. We develop new casino games that are skill-based and video games. And our focus recently has been on Las Vegas esports. There's a lot of legislation being passed where pretty soon we're going to be able to bet on video games and video game matches. And so Las Vegas needs video game content. And so our project, Asteroid Arena, is a strategy card game that I made specifically for Las Vegas esports and esports competition.
Do you see esports, and you mentioned skill-based gaming, overtake the traditional forms of gaming that we see on the Strip?
I think that because of the history of Las Vegas, there's always going to be a room for like blackjack and roulette. But, roulette was invented in the Italian Renaissance. And, you know, when are we going to come out with new games? Like 400 years is enough, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And especially newer customers, like millennials and younger, they're all about skill-based games and min-maxing. And there's literally no reason to play blackjack because you can't win. And so that's why poker's so popular, you know, with our age group, because it's skill-based. Mm-hmm. And you can actually win. So I think that a transition is happening towards a more digital format. And I think that the future of Vegas is turning more into a facilitator of competition rather than like a predatory business model where it's you versus the house. I think people are a lot more socially conscious, and those kind of games are going to overtake the classical games.
Interesting. So at what point in your life did you have this epiphany? I'm assuming you're probably from Vegas, correct?
I've been here 11 years, but I'm from Iowa, actually. Mm. But I consider myself I think 10 years is enough to consider myself a local.
So at what moment did you realize this transition happening between the gaming models on the Strip and then deciding to build Changing Vegas?
So my background is I'm a casino dealer. I've been dealing cards and craps and poker mostly in Las Vegas for the last 10 years. And I've seen the transition, and I've seen different groups of people come to Vegas and what they like and don't like. I also have a background in communication studies and psychology. And so I study trends and that kind of thing. And before we came out with the video game, I was developing casino games that were more skill-based. And I wanted to open a gaming school, which trained new age dealers in these skill-based games. But with COVID and the shutdown, you know, we can't do a physical location anymore. So we transitioned towards video games. And it ended up working out because now the video game industry has grown insane during COVID. And I think that transition was happening anyways, and now it's just accelerated.
Do you work at all with the Gaming Commission or any of the gaming corporations that kind of govern the Las Vegas Strip? Or is it kind of a back-end process where you just build your product and hope somebody comes and finds you?
Well, so right now the gaming... we're going to have to cross that bridge when we come to it eventually. That's another reason why we're starting with video games, because you can build a video game outside of the casino space, you know, and you just build it as like free to play business model and you're not regulated by Gaming Commission, but you just host tons of tournaments, you know, in Vegas. And like one aspect of our video game that we're thinking about implementing is a GPS feature. So if you are playing Asteroid Arena in the Vegas area, you get like bonus points and whatever. So we see it more of like making Asteroid Arena the esport of Las Vegas. And then later on, once it becomes super popular, we come out with the machines where people can gamble and stuff. But that's going to be down the line because of what you're talking about. There's a lot of regulations.
There's a lot of hurdles in Vegas. Yeah. That's something that I've learned as well with the blockchain movement.
Well, especially with the casinos, they have so much power that it's hard for newcomers to come in. But if you operate in a different space and then translate and work with them the whole ways, because we're planning on using their venues to host these tournaments, so they can see that, you know, we're not malicious about it. We want to work together, and you know, they'll see the light eventually. That's what we're hoping for, at least.
So, how long has Asteroid Arena been established or built out?
So I developed the game about 6 months ago. We really started pushing it on our social media about 2 months ago. It's brand new. I think we have 60 subscribers to our YouTube, so you know, we're just getting started. But you know, that's why we're at Tech Alley, and you know, there's a gaming convention coming up next month in California that we're going to, and we're just really getting out there. So we're new to the party.
It's very, very challenging. Yeah. What is your strategy in terms of onboarding new gamers into your ecosystem that you're building?
So I designed the game with three aspects in mind. And they're all designed to let new players connect and non-traditional gamers connect with our brand. The first is flavor. The game's about aliens. And so we have all these different aliens and all these different art styles. And so I think that that's going to be a draw. A lot of people will focus on characters. The gameplay, it combines elements from a bunch of different games, like strategy card games and MOBAs and battle royales and that kind of thing. So different kind of gamers are appealed. And then accessibility. I made the factions simple to play on purpose. And the strategy comes in with the interactions between the factions. So like, to answer your question, gameplay, flavor, and accessibility.
And this is a PC-based game?
It's going to be, yeah. Eventually, when I do the app, but we're going to start with PC.
Mm. Yeah. Is that because that's where the largest gamer community exists, is in the PC platform?
It's because of social influencers, because it's a lot easier to stream and make content in a studio on a PC instead of mobile. And we're a community-based business. We want to really listen to our players and develop the game based on their feedback. Gamers are really frustrated right now because these big corporations are buying out indie studios, and so we want to make sure that we stay connected with our customer base, and I think the best way to do that is to start with a PC game.
This is a message I've heard in the previous two interviews as well before you, a focus on collaboration and community in this digital world that we've begun to move into, and many of us exist in this digital form or in this digital world 4 to 10 hours a day, right? When, on Sunday, when we get that text from Apple showing us our screen time and it just keeps increasing and increasing, you realize that it's really important to have these internet communities, because it's all about collaboration. It's complete opposite of the traditional business model. And you've been networking in a few different tech-based communities out here. We're here at Tech in the Alley. You mentioned you were at my blockchain meetup at Blackfire last month, and you expressed interest in NFTs. What about NFTs excites you in implementing it within Changing Vegas ecosystem?
So diversifying is really important. Like, blockchain, as you know, is becoming more prevalent. And so having both a regular dollars and cents monetary system as well as crypto is very important. How I want to use NFTs is with the artwork. Artwork is a huge part of our game. We're hiring all Las Vegas artists, and each alien is going to be drawn in a different art style. So what we want to do is create a library of like high quality science fiction art and do a limited release. Every time we release new aliens, we release fine art images and attach the NFTs, and it's a collectible card game. So we want to make collectible NFTs of our art in addition to the cards in the actual game.
So you're actually understanding the power of crypto, but also realizing that it's not going anywhere, as so many people just want to dismiss it as a fad or it's all going to zero. Embracing where the internet communities are migrating to is very important to finding success, because I don't think any industry in the entire world moves as fast as crypto does and has the power of expanding the network effect exponentially.
Yeah, well, there's just so much space. It's kind of like, you know, I know this is an old example, but, you know, I'm 33, so I'm going to go with it. But like when the internet came out, I mean, there's very few regulations and there's all this just exploratory space. And, you know, there's going to be early adopters and late adopters, but I think crypto has enough momentum that it's here to stay. Now, what form it's going to take, what form is going to be accepted by everyone, I mean, obviously, we're still trying to figure that out. And that's kind of how I see it. I mean, you know more about this stuff than I do, but just looking at the different kinds of coins that are coming out and which ones are catching on, how they can apply. What I like about NFTs is that it's attached to like an actual object, whereas, you know, Bitcoin is just like its own currency, like its own economy, like phantom currency, kind of. You know, I know that's kind of a negative thing, but it's like phantom currency. Whereas NFTs have an actual object tied to each coin.
It has a utility.
And so it's weird that people aren't accepting NFTs because it's more traditional, because you're actually getting like an object or, you know, an achievement along with the coin. So that's why we want to focus on NFTs. It makes more sense to us.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Now that you've been... you're building within the gaming ecosystem of Las Vegas. How would you describe the gaming community out here in the city?
I mean, obviously there is a huge gaming community, but it's all casino gaming. And as the games become more and more digital, I think there's going to be more gamers out here. Right now, it's up and coming. Because of the esports betting legislation, there's a lot of new esports teams coming up, you know, Blackfire, that kind of thing. I think it's a budding industry, and it's not really established right now, but it's well on its way.
That's why you're getting on the ground floor, right?
Yep, that's it.
David, I have one final question for you. Same question I ask every single person that's ever come on my podcast. What does Las Vegas mean to you?
Las Vegas is the American dream, and I know that sounds cheesy, but... it's a melting pot, a lot of different people coming together, and someone can come here with $10 and leave with $10,000. And I think that the core of Vegas and the independent family business, I think that it's going to move away from the corporate model and more towards the heart of Las Vegas, and that's what it means to me, and I hope to make that happen with our company and what we're doing.
Pioneering the movement.
That's it.
Where do I send all the listeners and viewers to follow you on social media, learn more about Changing Vegas, or play Astro Arena?
So we have our YouTube. It's just Changing Vegas. And you can check out our website. It's changing.vegas. And there's links to our social media on there.
Boom. So easy. Yep. David, thank you for stopping by. Thank you for showing up to Tech in the Alley, the blockchain meetup. I know we're going to be very friendly, and we're going to see each other much more in the future. So thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next interview.